Hello and welcome to The Leap of Faith. Well, have you ever been inspired by the sermon at a religious service? Or do you seek out the service that's renowned for its brevity? Tonight we're exploring the art of the preacher. Billy Ray was a preacher's son, and when his daddy would visit, he'd come along. This in anticipation of the publication next Monday of a new book, Perspectives on Preaching, A Witness of the Irish Church, edited by Maurice Elliott and Patrick McGlinchey. Then he looked into my eyes, Lord knows to my surprise, the only one who could ever reach me was the son of a preacher man. Well, joining us in the studio this evening is one of its editors, Reverend Canon Dr. Maurice Elliott, Director of the Church of Ireland Theological Institute. Maurice, you're very welcome to The Leap of Faith. And also this evening is media consultant and trainer Orla Carmody, MD of Gavan Duffy Associates, who've trained many thousands of people, if not in preaching, certainly in presenting and speech writing. Orla, welcome also.
Thank you.
Maurice, can I begin by asking you the motivation for the book and who are the intended audience?
Well, I think, Michael, it's something that's born out of conviction and experience. Both Paddy McGlinchey and I are committed to the task of preaching ourselves. For the last 9 or 10 years, we've been involved in the training aspect of preparing both ordained clergy and readers in lay ministry for preaching across the church. And I think our conviction is that there's something important about the preaching task that sits at the very centre of the life of the church, the life of faith. There's something that we want to celebrate there. There's something we want to explore. There are possibilities of areas of preaching which perhaps remain untapped or which need to be revisited.
And are good preachers born or are they made?
I think, Michael, it's probably a little bit of both. We find it interesting that probably the best preachers who go out of the Church of Ireland Theological Institute are those who were already capable preachers before they came into the Church of Ireland Theological Institute. So there's something innate, I think, in certain personality types that makes them capable of being effective communicators and with the right skill set. I think to another extent, there is a skill set that people can learn and acquire and then implement appropriately.
Orla, I mentioned there in the beginning of the idea that some people may actually actively seek out a shorter service in the idea that they don't particularly want to be, well, put to sleep. In your side of the business and the world that you're in, if somebody became a bit preachy, you'd probably pull them up on it.
Yeah, well, the kind of public speaking that I would work with people on, it's all about connecting with your audience. And I always direct people when I'm working with them that you must put your audience first. So I can't turn up to deliver a speech, be it a business speech or indeed a preacher giving a sermon. You can't turn up and say, well, I'm going to say these 10 things and I don't care if you're interested or not. I'm just going to bash on. You have to decide, well, who is your audience? What does this audience know about this subject already? What's their expectation? What do they want to hear from me today? Okay, I've got that. Now what's my goal? What do I want this audience to do as a result of hearing from me? And then when you've worked those two out, then you think about the message. And I think the best preachers have always been doing that instinctively. I was really struck by that Christmas Eve at Mass in my local chapel in Bellewstown in County Meath, where I live. And the whole thrust of the sermon was, you're welcome. Thanks for coming. Great to see you here. Please come back again. That seemed to be the overarching message I was getting. And it struck me that in the days when people were much more active about church going, you know, maybe the preachers had a captive audience and could say and do what they liked to them or be preachy, as you say. But nowadays, they're so glad to see a packed church. They want you to come back. And I was just, what a good communicator the priest was and how good he made us feel about coming. And yes, you know what, we might go back next week as a result. And that, to my mind, is just a great connection.
And Maurice, if you've got in the Institute a room full of students who are learning to preach, is that the kind of message that you're putting across to them now?
Well, I think I would find a lot of common ground with what Orla's saying, because I think that sense of welcome within church is vitally important. And I think that sense of connection of a message to those who are receiving a message is essential as well. And it's one of the things that we do try to emphasize to our students, is that all sermons need to be appropriately contextualized, I suppose you would say, that there's a task of building a bridge between what the scripture message is and who the congregation are. And I mean, I really warm to what Orla was just saying about the need for the authenticity of the person. And I think that goes to the very heart of what we're trying to put across in the book.
Why don't we listen to a great preacher? And I suppose when you look at that list, top of the list would come Martin Luther King Jr. And here's the famous I Have a Dream speech.
I have a dream that one day this nation will rise up and live out the true meaning of its creed. We hold these truths to be self-evident, that all men are created equal. Yeah. I have a dream that one day on the red hills of Georgia, the sons of former slaves and the sons of former slave owners will be able to sit down together at the table of brotherhood. I have a dream that one day, even the state of Mississippi, a state sweltering with the heat of injustice, sweltering with the heat of oppression, will be transformed into an oasis of freedom and justice. I have a dream that my four little children will one day live in a nation where they will not be judged by the color of their skin, but by the content of their character. I have a dream today.
August 28th, 1963, and Martin Luther King Jr. and the I Have a Dream speech. Morris, there's technique in there, isn't there?
Oh, absolutely, Michael. I mean, I think the skill of the word craft, the way in which there are key phrases that repeat, there is something clearly visionary that's holding a prospect of something better in front of those who are listening. And I think most of all, what strikes me about that excerpt we just listened to is as much what he's saying and what we're hearing from those who are listening. You know, the audience are engaged to the point that they're actually animated and they're audible. And I think, you know, there's something dialogical that's going on there more than just monological.
There are a couple of apocryphal stories always worth repeating in relation to that particular speech. One is that he may have actually lost his way, and that's why he repeated himself a couple of times to get himself back on track. You know, he's actually delivering that speech because of his training as a preacher as much as the passion that he's delivering it with.
And clearly he has an immense innate skill that he's able to fall back on. You know, there's a sense, I think, that he's delivering that message in an extemporary way. It's living, it's engaged, it's dynamic, it's inspiring.
Is it of its time, Orla? Would you get away with that now if you were prepping somebody?
Well, that's a great question, because actually at the Pendulum Summit, which was held in Dublin recently, there was a big, big business conference in the National Convention Centre. And afterwards, I heard a couple of people talking about it, saying that some of the American preachers had that sort of style in their speech, and that an Irish business audience doesn't necessarily like that. That, you know, the kind of thing of, do you think we should all go out and be kinder to our colleagues? Say I. Should we do this and that? Absolutely. And stop asking us to say I. We get it already, you know. We're a little bit cynical. But what's lovely about Martin Luther's speech, and obviously it is the classic and the great and all of that, is the musicality in it, the cadence, the pause, the timing, the tempo. He has it all, and he understands his audience and he works his audience. And when we talk about authenticity in a speech, we want them to feed some of that into it, but not so much that it turns off your audience. We want you to turn on your audience. But somebody who is prepared to be authentic, what they're really doing is revealing themselves. And I always say to a speaker, you know, you have to show the audience who you are. I need to see you if I want to listen to you and follow you and believe in you. And I don't mean that I can't see you because I got the bad seat behind the pillar. I need to see you and who you are. And in a business context, when people are inclined to be very flat and very formal, I'm saying, let your personality in there. Your personality is the greatest gift you have. You must use it.
You won't do that with death by PowerPoint, will you?
No.
Morris?
Well, I think what Orla is talking about there is actually quite important, because it strikes me as the whole issue of cultural relevance. So, you know, there's something culturally appropriate about how Martin Luther King is doing that to a Southern black audience, which would not fit in any Irish church context that I'm aware of. If you try to invite response from most Church of Ireland parishes that I am familiar with, people will either hide under the pews or run out the door. But I do think there are other ways that we can make the same cultural connection and create the opportunity for dialogue within the preaching task.
So we've got a theme so far, which is passion. Let's just explore a little bit of our own history here in Ireland, which was the missions for the Roman Catholic faith, you know, the Rosminians, the Passionists, the Redemptorists, and the Hellfire and Brimstone. It worked. They went in their thousands and they were moved by the speeches. But would it necessarily work now?
They probably went to those sessions for the same reason people are going to the Pendulum Summit today, to be motivated, to be uplifted, to learn, to be inspired, to hear things you didn't think of before, to hear concepts that you understood before presented to you in a new way, to be entertained. They went for all of those reasons, as well as to be frightened a little into doing their life a little bit better, perhaps. But they did a job for their time. Would they get an audience now? I'm not sure.
I do think what they were striking a chord with, perhaps, was that there's something that's being delivered with conviction. And I think, you know, the good preaching needs to be undergirded by the right kind of convictions. I think that's what makes it effective, more than, you know, trying to master certain techniques, for example.
Well, I'm just being reminded, and you might pass this on to your students by way of encouragement, that but Martin Luther King Jr. only got a C grade when it came to his preaching skills.
Very reassuring for all of us.
Okay, let's continue this Hellfire and Brimstone theme for just a little bit longer. And another speaker, who is the famous Billy Graham, who in this speech from Chicago in 1971 asked the question, who is Jesus?
There were others that said he was revolutionary. He'd come to lead a revolution. Was he a revolutionary? In the sense that he changed men's lives, he was, but he never led a revolution against Rome. He never led a revolution against the existing authorities. As a matter of fact, some of them tried to get him to, and some of them thought he was going to, and when they found out that he was building a spiritual kingdom, they were no longer interested in him. And when they tried to tempt him about that, he said, bring me a coin. And he said, whose picture's on that coin? They said, Caesar. He said, all right, render to Caesar the things that are Caesar's and to God the things that are God's. And the scripture says they quit asking him questions. They didn't know how to answer that.
Billy Graham, 1971 in Chicago, talking about Jesus and quoting scripture, Morris.
Yes, and I think, you know, that's probably what Billy Graham has left as a great legacy of his own preaching tradition. You know, the focus not on Billy Graham, much as we might want to talk about him. I think if Billy Graham were sitting here, he would be telling us, actually, my purpose in terms of my preaching ministry was to point people elsewhere. And I think that still sits at the heart of the faithful preaching task today.
Historically, of course, it was a male-dominated process. Women preachers, Morris? Your experience of it now, because the Church of Ireland offers many people the opportunity to do that?
Well, yes, both in terms of reader ministry for quite a long time already, and in more recent decades, the Church of Ireland, as elsewhere in many Anglican provinces, has ordained women. And I mean, I think there are very effective women preachers, just as there are very effective male preachers.
But I think, you know, historically, men had so much more opportunity to preach, to speak, to lecture, all of those things in the past. And so much of the skill around lecturing, preaching, public speaking is miles on your clock. The more you do, the better you get. It's that simple. And if women didn't have that opportunity, they mightn't have been as good or as inclined to or have the confidence to do so back in the day. And interestingly, even where so much of our modern thinking around communications training came out of the church, because here up the road here in Booterstown, the Catholic Communications Centre was set up in the 60s. And many priests were working in that, improving their own communication skills. And then they became the teachers of communications to the business community. Some of those priests jumped out over the wall, as we know, and famously set up communications consultancy companies, the forerunners of my business. And fascinatingly, they determined so much of what we do. It was all based on good communication and good solid skills, the storytelling, the reaching your audience. But again, you know, it was so male dominated because simply they had the experience historically, be it in the military, in the educational institutions, in government, they had the edge. But I think women are making great strides and we're catching up. And I will say, watch this space. There's some phenomenal speakers, female speakers out there.
And one of the key insights of more recent kind of educational theory is the whole diversity of learning styles. And that's another thing that we're trying to explore in this publication. Some people are more wired visually. Some like to listen. There are kinesthetic learners. And you know, there are aspects of what women might bring to the totality of the preaching task, therefore, that can very much enrich all of that creativity and emotional engagement and so on.
And is there room for humour in a preacher?
Oh, absolutely. I think that's one of the key ways in which many effective preachers make a sort of primary connection with an audience to kind of draw them in to listening to what the message is.
And yet, Orla, it's probably something you'd warn a couple of speakers off doing maybe sometimes.
If humour comes naturally to you, you use it. You can't force it. Some people do it instinctively and well, others try it and it doesn't work.
Audiences still want then people to engage with them. And somebody who did that recently was Oprah Winfrey at the Golden Globe Awards.
I've interviewed and portrayed people who've withstood some of the ugliest things life can throw at you. But the one quality all of them seem to share is an ability to maintain hope for a brighter morning, even during our darkest nights. So I want all the girls watching here and now to know that a new day is on the horizon. And when that new day finally dawns, it will be because of a lot of magnificent women, many of whom are right here in this room tonight, and some pretty phenomenal men fighting hard to make sure that they become the leaders who take us to the time when nobody ever has to say me too again. Thank you.
Marks out of 10 for Oprah. Morris, Orla.
Well, absolutely. I'd give her 10 out of 10 for it. A phenomenal speech. Oprah is an extraordinary woman and a phenomenal communicator, a gifted communicator, always has been. That's why she's the success she has been. This speech was the culmination of all of that. Some people are saying, oh, is she running, going to run for the presidency on the back of it? Because it was politically astute. It was strategic in what she was doing. If there was one element of it I would criticise slightly, and you know, you'd be sort of hounded for even suggesting it because it was so perfect to all intents and purposes. I personally don't like that you go girl kind of tone. I think it's not helpful to us in any way. There's a lot of that, and I see it an awful lot, particularly in the women in business sector. You see that, oh, you go girl, you do it for us, you're great, you're wonderful. You know, I think we have to move a little beyond that. On the occasion, it was a very glitzy occasion, and probably that was the tone she felt was right. But as I said, I just have a little question mark over it. Is it doing us any favours? But that's a personal thing.
Well, I think she was very much catching a mood of the moment. And you know, there's a whole kind of theme of what's going on in contemporary American politics that she's kind of tapping into at that point. And I think she's done that very astutely. And it's indicative, I think, of somebody who has listened. And, you know, that's of the essence, as we were saying earlier, of the effective preacher.
And one of the chapters in the book that we're talking about this evening, which is Perspective on Preaching, is The Person and the Passion. And in there, one of the contributors describes the various different kinds of preacher, Morris.
Yeah, I think, you know, I think you're referring to the contribution from Bishop Harold Miller. And, you know, he talks about those who have more of a giftedness for the evangelistic thrust. Billy Graham would be indicative of someone like that, someone who's more expository, very much rooted appropriately in opening up the scriptures, somebody who's inspirational. And we've listened to examples of speakers who have that kind of oratorical skill.
And Orla, is there room for an introvert to be a good speaker?
Absolutely. Very often the introvert feels I can't go up there. I can't put myself out there because all those eyes are on me. And how will that make me feel? But if that person becomes totally focused on the message and totally focused on the audience and what I want that audience to do as a result of listening to me, they forget about themselves. It becomes all about the message. And that is, you know, the definition of losing your nerves. It is forgetting about yourself. The audience is what's important. And if the person speaking is totally focused on that, literally the nerves dissipate and they can be a really good speaker.
It's some of the best actors, I think, are probably temperamentally introvert. And yet, you know, they are able to get over themselves. We tell our students students, they have to be like Concord, breaking the sound barrier and sort of just, you know, going for what the audience is trying to hear.
And is it about brevity? Because, you know, we're going to go into the archives in just a moment, but is it about being the person who can condense a message down into the shortest possible time? Are we in a 140 character world?
No, not necessarily. I don't think brevity is. If we're listening to a good speaker, we will listen to them all day. We will want to hear more when they're finished. We're saying, oh, don't go, don't leave the platform. We want to hear more. But if they're losing us, if they're the audience is zoning out because we've gone very abstract with what we're saying, or our concepts are not rooted in stories and examples, then the audience begins to zone out, pick up their mobile phone, start checking their watch, shuffling in their seats. And if the speaker is not reading that, I've just lost my audience. But if they're focused completely on the audience, they read that, they change the message, they move, they add in the bit of humour, they pivot in order to keep the audience with them. And I'm sure as a preacher, Marit, you would know when your audience is shifting in their seats. I'm beginning to get a bit bored. You've got to do something
yes,
different.
Yes, absolutely. And I mean, I think illustration is the sort of come up for air moment often, you know, with yes. a congregation, you yes. know, where you kind of divert from expounding a passage to kind of talking in a more contemporary or animated way about what it means or how you might understand it.
And if you think about the Bible, it's a story. It's a story. It's another story. It was the way we originally wanted to hear those messages was all yeah. through stories.
And I think,
because they're the things, as you say, that make us look up and pay attention to.
Exactly.
You.
And I think even within scripture, you know, there's such a range, coming back to your question, Michael, about, you know, brevity. You know, some of the sermons that Jesus speaks are very short, so some of them are much more extended. I think there's a remarkable diversity of what is possible and what is locally appropriate.
Well, of course, there is a possibility of maybe taking another approach to preaching, and that is to use the skill of the rap artist. And in the United States, there is one preacher by the name of Tamara Lowe who's done just that.
If you'd like to know more, I can rap for you. Would you be interested in hearing a little rap? And everybody's, yeah, share the rap with us. So I say, okay. To be a survivor in this amazing race with the need for speed, you need God's grace. And if you're desperate like housewives watching Days of Our Lives, you can't cope without hope, and that's not on a soap. If you're looking to Oprah or Dr. Phil, you can shop nonstop or pop a pill, but the void won't fill and the pain won't kill till you love the one that hung on the hill. Kicking back in your lazy boy easy chair, watching Who Wants to Be a Millionaire? Nah, you're not going to find it there. No American Idol or Council Tribal has a final answer that'll satisfy you. CSI ain't got a clue. SVU don't know what to do. Not the ER or the OC. Nothing on a CD, TV, DVD, or MP3 can save you and me. CNN's got no good news. Here's a headline. You must choose. It's not a simple life, Paris Hilton. It's treading on thin ice, living in sin. You can be an apprentice for Donald Trump or eat Fear Factor fast food from a dump. You can be a heavy hitter, a Wheel of Fortune winner, a Fox News no spin spinner, or a flat out sinner. But you better check this life that you're living and make sure your sins are forgiven. I bet you 50 cent Elvis Dunn came and went, and eventually every Black Eyed Pea, Gwen Stefani, P. Diddy, and Britney, every wannabe on MTV with they icy bling, every Dixie chick that sings, they all gonna see the King of Kings. I don't care if you're J-Lo or Leno or Bono, one thing you gotta know, someday you're gonna die, bro, then where are you gonna go? Hey, I'm not talking some punk junk that's irrelevant like your grandma's church from way back when. It's not some preacher feature on TBN that you need to be liking or listening. The real superstar is Jesus Christ. He's the way, he's the truth and the life. One day he's gonna split the sky. He's the brightest light and the highest high. So what I came to say and what I'm telling you is don't buy that stupid stuff they be selling you. It's all designed to fill your head and waste your space until you're dead. Here's the bottom line of my rhyme. Give your life to God while there's still time.
Wow.
Tamara Lowe there with a rap.
Isn't she absolutely cool? She's brilliant. I mean, if she was in your local parish, wouldn't you want to go to hear her every Sunday? She's amazing. And she'd bring in young people and she'd bring in the multi-generational piece. Very interesting. And clearly she's adapting her style to suit the age we're living in and to pull in her audience. I shouldn't say her audience, her congregation, I beg your pardon. But yes, absolutely. I think she's brilliant.
I'm wondering, are there any potential rappers in your class?
I'm not sure, because I think, you know, that's a very particular skill set that lady has. It's a very impressive skill set. I think the danger would be for somebody to try and replicate it who would not be replicating it out of the authenticity that we've talked about earlier. But I mean, something like that, I think, can very helpfully supplement, a more substantial message.
I think that has been the constant theme of our chat this evening, is this idea of passion and authenticity will carry a person to any audience.
Yeah, it is the key underlying piece, that authenticity. That sense of this is important.
Before we go to our final example this evening, we want to talk a little bit about President Obama and his ability to not only give a speech, but he also preached at one particular stage
Marla.
Yeah, he was very interesting, again, in communications terms, because, again, his sense of connection, his belief, his genuine ability to just be who he was. And, you know, I referred earlier to, I can't see you, you're behind the pillar, you know. We could actually see him. We really could see who he was and what he believed in. And you really got a sense that this was genuine. Even as a couple, Michelle was the same. You could just read them, their body language, everything about them was genuine and authentic.
So a special thanks this evening to Dr. Morris Elliott, who is the director of the Church of Ireland Theological Institute, and to Orla Carmody of Gavan Duffy Associates. Thank you both for assisting us in our journey through what is the skill of preaching. We're going to leave you with President Obama, who we've been talking about today. Not only could he preach, he could also sing. Here is President Obama delivering a eulogy for State Senator Clementa Pinckney, who was one of the nine victims of a shooting at Emmanuel African Methodist Episcopal Church in Charleston, South Carolina.
That, more than any particular policy or analysis, is what's called upon right now, I think. Yeah. What a friend of mine, the writer Marilyn Robinson, calls that reservoir of goodness beyond and of another kind, that we are able to do each other in the ordinary cause of things. That reservoir of goodness. Mm-hmm. If we can find that grace, uh-huh, anything is possible. Yeah. I'm not. If we can tap that grace, uh-huh, everything can change. All right. Amazing grace. Uh-huh. Amazing grace. Amazing grace, how sweet the sound that saves.